Happy Sabbath, everyone. We are in our Family Matters series, season two. We've been navigating the house these last couple weeks, discovering where deep emotional connections are tied to different places in our home and how Jesus meets us in these places. 2 weeks ago, we started at the front door. We talked about anxiety and promise. Last week, Pastor Raywin preached from the bedroom, depression and rest. Many of us have heard sermons from bed, but how many of us have actually seen a sermon from the bed? If you've never and you're visiting, welcome to La Sierra University Church. At one point during the sermon, Raywin just laid down. She didn't even talk. We just said, wow, that looks great. That's fantastic. She talked about depression and rest. And if you look closely enough, just past her, there on the nightstand there, that bed, there's a family portrait. That's your pastoral team. Thank you, Lauren, for the great work you've done for this sets. Lauren Pender has been fantastic. And I want to thank Keith Helbley as well, who helped create some of it for this week. Thank you, Keith. Really appreciate all of our members and the good work that they put in. But that brings us to today. And my part of the house is the bathroom. What an interesting place to preach on. There's a couple different scenarios here. But none of them would be welcomed on this church stage. I thought about, well, there's a toilet. I could be in the shower. I don't feel comfortable enough to do either of those, and I think none of you would appreciate that either. So we kept moving on. However, there is another place in the bathroom that has deep significance to us, the bathroom mirror. The bathroom mirror, that mirror is probably the place that we see ourselves most clearly and sometimes most cruelly. It is the place where we can be intimate and sometimes intense with ourselves. It is the place before the rest of the world sees us, where we are probably our most honest when we look at ourselves. And sometimes when we're most honest with ourselves, if I'm being honest, we don't always like what we see. And so that bathroom mirror can be clear and critical. One of the most famous lines in all of Disney villains is the following. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest one of all? This is said by the evil queen who I suppose might be the stepmother for Snow White. And she looks to the mirror regularly or often for validation as she compares herself to everyone else in the land. So she constantly looks at this mirror, and if there is someone in this vast land that happens to rival or is more beautiful or better than herself, she becomes enraged and angry, full of fear and insecurity. I feel like Disney's trying to preach to us today. This adaptation of 1937 is it a prophetic story about someone who constantly looks at her screen to compare herself to all in the land, and when she finds herself less than, she or he feels distraught and broken? Disney is trying to preach. We live in a world of comparison. Hyper-comparison. We live in a world that is constantly curating what might look good. And if we're already struggling through life, it doesn't make it any easier. Here's some research numbers for you. 46% of adolescents ages 13 to 17 say social media makes them feel worse about their body image. As our young people are surveying the land about the globe, you remember 20, 30 years ago when there was not this pressure. We had just a few in our tribe, in our community, in our neighborhood, and we were comparing and our body and our psychology and our spirit could handle that, and we knew how to navigate these things. But now in a global world where the world is always awake somewhere, we are constantly comparing our value and our worth to someone or something. And as it is, there will always be someone out there better than us. In our global situation, there will be someones, groups. What does that do to our bodies? And this isn't just about our adolescents and our young people, although their brains are still forming and they're still growing into who they be. It also affects adults. Researchers in a recent study have found that low engagement and few reactions online decrease self-esteem. When you post that picture, when you put out that video and no one but your mom likes it, it deflates us, doesn't it? Like, man, I really thought that was a smart post. I thought someone in the world would give me some kind of affirmation, and we just get deflated. While positive reactions increase feelings of belonging and connection. So the social media has found a way to form our sense of value. What ought to be important and what not. But it's not just social media that affects our self-image. A voice from our childhood. What voice as an adult are you still running from your childhood? What voice says from your childhood are you still trying to prove wrong? Our self-image is not just about social media, but the voices about us. Maybe those voices are still chasing us from our young childhood. I don't know if you know what it's like to be a middle child in a house. If you don't, let me tell you about it. No one cares about you, period. Middle-aged people are like, oh man. The oldest, strong, you know, they want to go. They want to, you know, and then, you know, in our culture, our oldest sister's very strong. You know, she's got a voice. Then we had another girl, and girls are so important. And I was the third of the four. My job was just to go along with the flow. How does that follow us? What about our culture? What does our culture deem valuable? What does our culture deem meaningful? And if your culture has become social media, then whoever pop star or pop culture you tend to follow begins to breathe into you what's valuable and what you ought to look like and what you ought to think like and what you ought to do. And when you can't quite do that, we lose grip. Maybe it's our personal experiences. Maybe you've failed once or twice or quite a few times. And so that failure has become a voice to your image. Maybe it's success and you've bought too much into it and it speaks into your life. Our experiences matter. Those are the voices that play. Maybe it's been abuse and the pain and the tragedy and the scars left behind, the voices. We all have to work. We all have to work to be able to find the clearest image by which we were made. After. This is debated, but it has been pointed that up to 85% of people worldwide struggle with low self-esteem at some point in life. And while that number is debated, it is agreed upon that indeed there is a large number of adults worldwide that deal with self-esteem. While the number is indeed not agreed upon by everyone, it is agreed upon that self-esteem is definitely a struggle for most adults. We have a difficult time learning to care for the image that we were created in. We get in front of our mirrors and begin to just pick ourselves away. Sometimes we do it out loud, and sometimes we do it quietly. We get to this bathroom and we get to our mirror. We begin to check ourselves out. Before anyone else sees us. But we see ourselves. Mercy. Look at that hairline. We got some problems there. A young adult member here once told me on their way out, I was shaking their hand. They said, "Hey, Pastor, I'm gonna be real with you. You're starting to look like an unk." I was like, "What does that mean?" He says, "You look old." He said, your hair, bro, is too thin. He didn't say that. I heard that. Or maybe the hair is too frizzy, right? We've got frizzy hair. I wish my hair was more straight. I always wanted straight hair. The kind that I saw in movies that flowed. Surfers riding a We used to have a very familiar chaplain here who had beautiful hair, had a Puerto Rican accent. I always thought him to look like Jesus. He got mad at me last time I said his name, so I won't say Sam's name up here. Look at my hairline. Where's it going? Why is my forehead a five head now? What's happening with me? Is my hair too thick? Is it not thick enough? Don't I have that good stuff? And I feel like I always have a bad hair day. Maybe it's from stress. I'm losing my hair because I'm stressed. I've got a bald spot because I used too much dye when I was young. Maybe I'm just ugly. God, why does my hair keep falling out? You know what? I also got this ugly beard. Every morning I look at it, and that thing is messy. I feel like maybe animals live in it. But you know what it's really doing? It's hiding a double chin. The double chin came because I'm old. And the beard and the double chin makes me look less professional. I should look more professional. What do people think of me when they see me? What do people think of me? I mean, the beard is growing gray. It used to be luscious and black and beautiful and youthful, and now it's just gray. Gray from stress because of kids. This is why they have ruined my life. Or maybe it's work. Maybe I work too much. Or maybe it's because I'm trying to be successful. I see a lot of my friends online. They're doing some great stuff. Why can't I do more great stuff in life? Why can't I travel more? Why can't I have cool pictures on Mount Everest? It's just not for me. And I stress, what do people think? What do they think about me and my beard? What do they think about my car? I know what I think about my car. When they hear me speak. Do I make sense? Do I make a difference? Or is it just another voice making noise in the world? That double chin's reminding me I'm getting fat. Darn it. I'm ugly. Ugly. I'm ugly. Let's not talk about the face. I'm missing a tooth. Every morning I wake up and I remember, oh yeah, that's right. That tooth is not there. It's not been there a long time. And growing up, I saw everyone else with teeth, man, and they look good. And my tooth that is not there reminds me, maybe I'm not like everyone else. Because the tooth is definitely missing. My teeth aren't straight. Didn't get braces. Or maybe you did get braces 3 times and it's still not straight. Do I have an ugly smile? Do you think people look at me and when I smile, they chuckle or they laugh or they whisper? Why does my voice sound like that? I got so many bags in my eyes. I got wrinkles around them. And because I'm always stressed, my eyes are always red. I'm tired. I can't get enough sleep because I didn't listen to Pastor Raywin's advice. The dark circles get darker. And somebody tell me about pimples. Why am I going through adolescence again? I'm a grown man. I shouldn't get pimples. And still, I do. You know what? I gotta be pretty ugly. That's probably what it is. It's probably what it is. These scars, these feelings, these emotions, definitely not photogenic. And I don't know about any other Polynesian, but I have got the biggest nose in the world. Big nose. Where did that come from? Probably Europe. Thanks, Europeans, for coming to our island. You know what this reminds me of? I am going to be judged by everyone. Everyone. Because I got too many spots. Because I'm aging. What is indeed wrong with me? And when I look into this mirror and I see this and I hear these voices that press on me, you're not good enough. You gotta look more like what we've seen here and what we've seen there. And you're aging. You know what my wife texted me a few minutes ago? She texted me, she said, hey, she said, Leo just saw Dr. Brand, and he said, he looks younger than you, Dad. How dare you, son? So now, I add up my mistakes, my embarrassing moments, my bad posture, definitely my overthinking. And of course, my fear of rejection and jealousy. And now, I don't even want you to look at me. In this scene, what once was a clear image is now just the shattered, mere pieces of the person who is hiding behind all of the voices that speak. You can still see me. I'm here. If you look close enough, I'm still here. But I'm hiding behind all of the voices that create my image. I'm reminded in the book of Genesis that I must be careful not to forget my real image by which I was created in. My daughter and I were talking last night. And we're talking about life and language, and we're talking about how hard it is to be a young teenager and using the right, correct words and wanting to be frustrated, but also being careful not to harm anyone with our own words. And it came to the images because this is what I was preaching on. And I said, honey, tell me, what is, like, when we look in the mirror, what is the scariest thing that you could think of that would cause you to hide behind things? And And she said to me, just as quick as can be, judgment, Dad, is very loud. Judgment is very loud. And it caused me to think, not just the judgment of others, but the judgments that we make ourselves about ourselves. Genesis reminds us of our image. Again, Genesis speaks. So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female created them. So as Genesis speaks here, we hear the word image. The Hebrew word for that is tselem. Tselem means image or likeness, and often used in the Near East or ancient days for idols. This is an idol that you would create. So kings who owned the land of their kingdom would put these tselems everywhere, and the tselems would be these idols or these images, because when people would see the tselem, they would say, oh, yes, this land has the presence of this king. And so when we hear this word, tselem, or image, in Genesis, it is the author reminding us that when you and I were created, the only voice that was present was not the voice of our doubts or our fears or our worries or comparison or social media. The only voice that was present was the voice of God. And God leans in and says, we will make humanity in our image. You and I were created in God's image. You are tselem. I am tselem. Every time that we see each other and others around us, even those whom we disagree with, even those who get on our nerves, even those who disagree with us in all sorts of ways, when we see them, we are to dignify human life as divine dignity. Tell him that image. Justo Gonzalez, Cuban-American Latin theologian, writes, sin is not in ambition. Oftentimes when we talk about that first primal sin, it was the ambition to be like God. That's why Adam and Eve did it. Instead, he says, but rather in the lack of faith, in not believing what was already a reality, that they were like God. In Genesis chapter 3, the serpent comes to them and says, hey, don't listen to God. He doesn't want you to eat of the fruit that you might be like him and know between good and evil. In other words, the serpent's saying, hey, if you really want to be like God, you ought to eat this fruit. It's helping them forget that initially when they were made, they were already made in the image of God. You and I do not have to labor to become the image of God. You and I were created by God in God's image. So, we are not the only ones that deal with image issues and problems. It has been a problem for history. It has been a biblical character's problem. You remember in Genesis 18, Sarah laughs. Sarah laughs. What? That's a cynical laugh, maybe. I'm not sure, but we could surmise it was cynical. I'm over age, God. You can't use me. I'm long past my usable date. How many of us have ever just laughed at the possibility that God might be speaking into our life because, well, I just can't do that thing. Talking with a student this last week, older student. And I said, how are you doing? He says, well, I'm not graduating this year, but I'm graduating next year. And, you know, I see all these young people graduating. And I said, how do you feel about it? He says, it's fine. I said, are you sure? He says, yeah. He says, it's fine because God works in God's time, and I'm okay with that. I said, yeah, amen to that. It only took me 8 years to get through college. Praise the Lord. God works in God's time. Maybe in Exodus chapter 4, remember the story of Moses, where he tells God, God, I stammer, I stutter, I'm not a good speaker. I can't do this, God. I'm unsure of how I can lead anyone. As the Lord angel comes to Gideon and says, hey, you mighty warrior. Gideon says, what? How can I? I come from the smallest family in the smallest tribe with the weakest groups. I am the smallest. How can I? The Samaritan woman, when Jesus comes and asks her for water, are you talking to me? You, a Jew, and I, a Samaritan. All of these individuals knew what they believed about themselves because they hadn't been able to grasp the image that they were created in. Created in the image of God. If you've ever felt like these Bible characters, you are not alone. We've all been there. We're always surprised when God shows up and calls us, and we're always taken back, like, God, didn't you know who I am? Don't you know my shortcomings? And it's as if God didn't know what he was doing when God created us to begin with. God has always known who we are. God is not surprised. Why are we surprised? God is not surprised. He knows us. We sing a song. He knows my name. You know that song? Because he knows us. He knows us by name. God knows you. God knows me. God is not surprised by what we can or cannot do. Why are we? Melissa Ballesteros Williams and I talk through this series. I run things through her as a licensed therapist because I always tell her, I don't want to come up here and say things and then you call me later and be like, nope, that's not true. So let me get that out of the way first and then I can share it. And she says this, the thing that made us special was not the fact that we were created, because many things were created, all things were created, but we were created in God's image. We were created as a reflection of God, uniquely, specifically, poignantly. That's what makes us special. Before we get going, before Adam and Eve makes any decisions, before they have dominion, before they give names, they were already imbued with the identity that they were made in God's image. You see, when you are clear about your identity, you will function in the world much better. The word we saw in the text was dominion. You may have dominion over things, which gives a lot of us concern, right? Because there are a lot of human beings who are trying to take dominion of this world in different ways. And they try to harm others, and they're trying to kill the land and the environment. And we say, why would God give humanity dominion? But Adam and Eve, their identity was made in the image of God, a self-giving God, a loving God. A good God, a God who sacrifices that we might be with him for eternity. That kind of good God. So when Adam and Eve in their state, before all the things that happen, when they take in dominion, they work and they steward as self-giving people. When your image is clear, your function in this world becomes more purposeful. Image is important. Our value is already designed into the fabric of our creation. It came before Adam and Eve ever produced or assigned names. We must be vigil not to allow all the noise from our childhood, from our family histories, from our social media, from our productivity comparisons to form our image. We must be vigil. You and I must be clear that we are already valuable and magnificent with all of our quirks and uniquenesses because we were created in the image of God. How can we live this out more fully in the image of God this week? How can you and I do it? It's hard work. Every morning we got to wake up to our list of stuff. How do we do it? Well, I don't have a solution for you, but I've got maybe four suggestions. I'll make five. I have four, but I want to put a fifth one, and I'll start with the fifth one. That is, if you need therapy or counseling, go get it. That is good, faithful work of the Christian person. The work that we do here is not, this series is not to substitute that. This series is not to somehow subdue all of that. We are big proponents and we celebrate counseling and therapy. Go do that. Now, here's my four. Firstly, this week, treat yourself kindly. Treat yourself kindly. Treat yourself kindly as you would a good friend, not as you would do yourself. Because if I'm honest, and maybe if you are too, and we're sitting in honesty, we don't know how to treat ourselves kindly. Now, we can do it to our best friends. You know, you call a best friend up and they're going through something, you're like, ooh, girl, you know you number one. You don't need him in your life. No, no, girl, no, you are a successful, strong woman. You're like, yeah, you right, I am. Yeah, you right, you are. You got this. Yeah, I got this. You got this. I got this. But then we look in the mirror and be like, you are a failure. How come you can't get your life together and your relationship together and be like this person or that person? You know, we tend to be good to our close friends, not so good to ourselves. Treat yourself kindly. Turn to someone and say, be kind to yourself. Melissa and I, when we were talking, she said it this way. Treat yourself the way that you would treat your child. Talk to yourself the way you would talk to your child. Not to you. No, don't talk to you by the way you would talk to you. Talk the way that you would talk to your child. What would I want my child to see in herself or himself? What would I want my child to feel? What courage? To see their beauty? And if that's how you would speak into your child's life, if you don't do that for your life, guess what? You're modeling to your child how they ought to speak to themselves. If you don't find a way to be kind and good and encouraging to you, and your child is watching that, they're going to believe that the reality is if the one who created me and I in their image is no good, I must be no good. Treat yourself kindly. Talk to yourself the way you would talk to your kid. How do you expect him or her to speak of themselves? How do you expect him or her to see themselves? And if we can't do it for ourselves, can we expect our children to be resilient enough to do it for them? Then we carry on this generational brokenness, right? Like the same insecurities we've had to deal with, we pass this load on to them. And parents, I know you work hard. I'm cheering for you. Listen, I need you to pray for me because in my house sometimes I feel like, whoa, I'm failing. But each of us has the great work of processing things that we don't pass that into our children. So this week, be kind to yourself. Hug yourself. Be caring to yourself. Be encouraging and inspiring to yourself. By the way, this is an actual book, Hug Yourself. Fantastic little book you can find on Amazon. 16 great stories about from wonderful writers who write about body positivity and care and learning how to be kind to yourself. Number two, here's my second one. Download this app. This is from my friend David. We were meeting and we were having Bible study together. And he was talking about how, you know, Pastor, I'm really working through how I'm going to focus and dial in to be the best part of myself. And he said, sometimes social media like just sucks me in. And I'm like, I don't know what that's like. Social media, I'm never on there. And he's like, this is what I did. I downloaded this app, Screen Zen. And he says, what it does is it puts my phone on lock at certain times that I've set for it. And then if I want to go on social media and I forget, I just pop on my social media and it'll say no. And then if I get mad, I push it again and it'll say, nope, come on, you can do this. And if I keep pushing it insistently, it'll say, okay, think about it for a little bit. And then I'll let you do what you need to do. What a thoughtful way to process. Should I just jump on here, or will it be more healthy for me to just back away and touch grass and live fully with people? Download this. This is a cool app. You download it when you get a chance. Here's number three for you. On the 29th, Friday night, we've got five homes with amazing families who have decided they would host a meal. Yo, this is, friends, this is a thing to do. We always talk about, like nobody knows me, or how come people, I'm not getting enough out of church. I'm not building enough relationships. This is it. You need to, if you want to, get that QR code right now. You can go onto the church and go online, sign up. We've got space, so get in there. Why? Because this will be safe spaces where we share a meal together, where we grow together, where we choose to live life together. Church is more than just a worship service. Church is more than just great praise and good lights and beautiful sound systems that put out the church is about doing life together. So get on there. All the pastors, we've all signed up. We're going to homes. And whether you come or not, we're going to eat there and enjoy it. But it'd be much better if we were all there with you and you were with us. So go on there. Research has showed over and over, time and time again, that community and fellowship is the best way to grow healthy, spiritual, strong relationships. So go on there. Sign up for Open Table. Lastly, here's my last one for you. I know this is going to be hard work, but you're going to have to trust the voice of the one who knows you intimately, created you purposefully, who loves you deeply. I know it's not as easy as just saying it, but you're going to have to trust the one who does not leave you by yourself in the valley, the one who grants you purpose even when you feel like you're a failure. The one who celebrates you day in and day out. Who calls upon 1,000 angels to look at his daughter and his son. So you're gonna have to do the work of peeling back some of these layers, not breaking your mirror. Clearing it out a little bit. And maybe it doesn't start with all of them. But work through what has been holding you down. What have you been hiding behind? What have you been telling yourself that is untrue? What kind words must you begin to share and say about yourself that is indeed from God? And clear out the window. And as you clear out this window, your task this week, on your own mirror at home, in your bathroom, or in your bedroom, the one that you look at the most, we all have one. And I want you to take a sticky note. Just like this one. It's clean and blank and it's fresh. It hasn't been tarnished yet, not by any voices. This is before you turn on your social media, before you've decided to compare yourself to anyone or anything else, just fresh off the pad. And I want you to write on there what you love about yourself. Please know, this is not about being boastful or proud, because you recognize your good things about you does not mean you are not humble. Humility and recognition of the creation that you are coexist beautifully. So I want you to take one, and I want you to write, what is it that you love about yourself? What image of God bears witness in you? And then I want you to put it up on your mirror. And at night when you come home, I want you to make sure you read it and remember that that is true about you. So on your way out today, when you go to the doors, the pastors, we pitched in from all of our checks, paychecks. We didn't. To buy sticky notepads. So adults, on your way out, each door, the greeters will give you one. And we want to invite you, take one, and when you take it home, take it seriously. Every morning when you get up, before the world or stress or things of the world come at you, you write down, man, I love this about me. And post it on your mirror, and then take a moment to acknowledge that that is true about you and thank God for that. Then when you come home at night, make sure you take a look at it and remind yourself, indeed made in the image of God. And if you have children, you make sure you get to their bathroom and you take it for them. And you have a conversation in that bathroom. Parents are very familiar with bathroom conversations. And you write down what it is that they love. Maybe it's their little legs that hold on to their feet, because it takes them places. And you write that puppy down and you put it on their mirror and you make sure they see it in the morning and they see it at night. Each family, each adult gets one of these. May this sticky notes this week be a sacred touch from God in your life to be well.